Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another action-packed episode of the CNC Football Factory. This is your host, Carlos Sardinius, and I am flying solo today, so you will be reduced to listening to me, and nothing but me, as I talk Jets football and whatever the heck else it is I want to talk about. My partner in crime, CJ DeSimone, is out of commission right now. He is working, and actually getting paid for it, which is probably a better deal than what I'm doing right here. But again, welcome everybody. I'll be here for about as long as I feel like talking. If you guys feel like chiming in, the number to dial is 917-889-7042. We have a lot to really talk about. It's been a couple weeks since we've been away. And we've plenty of New York Jets news to talk about, Mo Wilkerson's contract, some other things going on around the NFL. But there's been something that's been on my chest since last night that I wanted to get out. So I'm going to actually start the show talking about something that has nothing to do with the Jets or football in general. Yesterday, American Pharoah won the Triple Crown for the first time in 37 years, the first time in my existence that there's been a Triple Crown winner. And I have to say it's an amazing feat. I was into it. It's hard not to be. It's history, right? But there's still people out there, which just drives me crazy. There's still people out there that were poo-pooing the Triple Crown, saying it's not that big of a deal, saying, it doesn't mean much in the grand scheme of things. Is this where we're at? Is this what society is reduced to? We have people that their instinctive nature is to be a contrarian just for the sake of being a contrarian, just for the sake of saying, I have a different position than you, I am smarter than you. You're miserable people. I was arguing with people on Twitter last night about the significance of it. How is it not important? It's the first Triple Crown in 37 years. No big deal. I mean, you know, what kind of miserable lives do you people live? The kind of people that get upset with babies being born and pictures of kittens and rainbows. I mean, just the horrible, miserable existence it must be to be you. The thing that I wonder is, when did this really happen? I mean, do you think back 50 years ago that people were this cynical still? Were they the same way and we just see it now more because, you know, we have the ability to post whatever the heck we think, whether we fart, poop, or pee on Twitter or on Facebook? Are people so self-absorbed they can't realize what history is, or they have to take a position that states, no, you know what, it's not that big of a deal, because they're basically just a bunch of haters, and I'm sick of it. Can't you just enjoy the moment for what it is? Why is it that every time something good happens, a historical event, or some team wins a championship, all of the first thing, the media does it too. It's not just people that follow and listen on Twitter and Facebook and everything else. Media does it too. The first thing they do is try to assign blame or find the fault in everything. Just sit back and enjoy it for once. Quit being a miserable troll. It's aggravating to me to even have to sit here and have to defend something like the Triple Crown is a big deal. I know not everyone watches horse racing. Heck, nobody pays attention to it outside of 3 weekends a year. But you know what? There's a season for all kinds of things. And this is a pretty cool event. I'd never seen it before. And the fact that people are poo-pooing the event, saying it's not that big of a deal. Some of the other stuff I saw was beyond ridiculous. I think we've just gotten to a point where, I mean, you know, there's people that were protesting horse racing because of the implications and the fact that they are, oh gosh, what did they say? Exploiting the horses. They're horses. They run. Get over it. Jesus. We live in such a PC society. It drives me absolutely bonkers. And I know you didn't tune into the show because you're probably a Jets fan. You probably care less about horse racing. But you're stuck with me right now. And frankly, I am venting to you. It's aggravating the amount of hate that there is out there. I'm just kind of curious when it happened. When did we turn into this society? And you know, we're probably living in the golden age. I know it seemed like, not really lately the past few years, but really the golden age. I mean, there are people that grew up in the Depression era that weren't as cynical as some of these spoiled, rotten, snot-nosed, smarmy kids and members of the media. Just take a step back. You have it pretty good, guys and gals. Anyway, let's talk a little bit of Jets football. I'm going to step off the high horse here. A lot of stuff going on. Again, we haven't been on for a couple weeks, and some of the things going on, let's talk a little bit about the quarterback competition or lack thereof. There seems to be a little bit of misunderstanding between what Coach Gailey, Chan Gailey, had said about Geno Smith pretty much having the starting job, and this is about a week ago, and then Coach Bowles coming back and saying, no. It's still going to be competition. Geno's getting the first reps, but he needs to get the first team reps. It's his job to lose. It's Ryan Fitzpatrick's job to gain. Much ado about nothing, really, but it did kind of take the media by storm, some of the fans by storm, really, because it's just such a quiet time in the NFL and in Jets land. Really, I'd say much ado about nothing. I think basically once they got together, had a meeting of the minds, they pretty much clarified that, yes, it's Geno's job to lose. He's going to get the first-team reps. He needs the first-team reps. Ryan Fitzpatrick is more familiar with the system. He's still recovering from his broken, I want to say, ankle or leg, so, something of that effect. So much ado about nothing, guys. Don't sweat it. I think we'll still have a chance to see Ryan Fitzpatrick push for this job. Geno is not entrenched indefinitely at the number one position. I think he offers a little bit more upside if he could clean up the turnovers this year. But, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick does have, outside of playing the New England Patriots, he tends to not turn over the ball. So, and that's kind of something we need. One other thing I wanted to touch on that was happening during OTAs, it's still kind of going on right now. Jason Marrow kind of tweaked his back during one of the days over the past week. Doesn't seem too serious. It was still something to keep an eye on. Still fully expect Jason Marrow to be out there on the field. We have the mandatory mini camp starting June 9th and through 11th. So that's starting up this Tuesday. And hopefully we'll see Jace out there. One fella that the big question is, will he or will he not be around, is Mr. Mo Wilkerson. And a lot of debate going around his contract. Is he holding out right now? Is he not holding out? There was reports saying he was coming to camp, and then there were others reports saying he wasn't coming to camp. And then there were reports of Mo Wilkerson saying, we don't know if we're coming to camp. I wouldn't expect to see him. They're still trying to negotiate a contract. He's making just shy of $7 million a year, and he's trying to get paid like the J.J. Watts of the world. He saw Cameron Jordan's contract came out as $33.8 million guaranteed. Mo Wilkerson actually tweeted out and said, yep, I see how this one goes. So a lot of controversy around that. I seem to think, you know, if they could settle in at a $40 million guaranteed money range, I think that's where they'll end up, somewhere around $13, $14 million a year. I think that's fair. I see no reason to not pay him. I don't. You know, there's a lot of people wondering, are we going to trade him? Do we need to trade Mo Wilkerson so that we can keep Sheldon Richardson and Snacks and Leonard Williams? You don't need to trade him. It's not necessary. Where is the money being invested otherwise? What are you going to do? There's not a ton of offensive linemen you want to throw money at. Most of the time, that ends up not working in your favor. Just ask the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and they traded for Logan Mankins and how that worked out. Going free agency for offensive line is not the greatest way to go. You need to build that through the draft, and that needs to be a position that they target for heavily for years on in the future. Next year, the year after that, you have to constantly invest in that offensive line. Outside linebackers, there's not a ton out there to sign either. You know, you need to address that through the draft over the next couple of years. But don't go trading away one of the top 100 players in the NFL for what? For a couple draft picks in the future because we're too good at the defensive line? No. Go ask the Giants. Were they too good? Did they have too good of a defensive line when they won two Super Bowls? No, they didn't have too good of a defensive line. They kept on drafting, kept on getting guys, kept their guys on for the most part, and their D-line helped them win two Super Bowls. You don't need to trade away great defensive linemen. They don't grow on trees. You can address other positions of need. And it's not like we have a quarterback we need to pay $20 million a year to. That guy's not there. Who is it? Who are you going to pay all that money to? No, keep Mo Wilkerson. Make that man happy. He's a leader in the locker room. He's a hometown boy. Grew up right around the corner from where I did. He grew up around Linden, New Jersey. I mean, he's a hometown guy. He is a New York Jet, and you got to take care of that guy. And I trust Maccagnan will over the next few weeks. All righty. With that being said, let's talk a little bit about some other news that's been going on. Again, if you want to call in, the number is 917-889-7042. I am by myself, so if you are some kind of raving lunatic, I won't be able to screen you when you call in. So you could probably sneak one by me today, today only. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about some other Jets news going on. The New York Jets recently announced something that they're calling variable pricing, which to me doesn't seem like much of anything other than a different way to extract a little bit of more money out of fans. I don't think it's inherently bad necessarily. It's kind of odd that they're calling it. Just call it what it is. You're just charging people what you think the games are worth. That's it. I mean, that's not that hard to figure out. You know, they have tiers, and I'm going to pull up the tiers here in a little bit. They have some that they consider the premier games, which are four home games, that they're pricing a little bit higher if you were to buy them an individual level. And then they have some that are considered, or premier is average, and marquee is great, apparently. So the marquee games are Cleveland opening day. You have the Jets versus Philadelphia on the 27th of September. The Bills and the Jets on Thursday night, and then the Pats versus the Jets, December 27th. Now, what they're considering the premier games is the home game against Washington, Jacksonville, which I can't consider putting Jacksonville in anything close to what you should consider premier, but let's just go with it here for a second. The Miami Dolphins, the Tennessee Titans. So club tickets aren't impacted by the change, and it doesn't really change anything on your whole total season tickets, but there are adjustments to individual games and all across the spectrum, from PSL seats, 300-level seats. They're really just trying to get as much money as possible from the games that they think are in demand. If you think of it from an economic standpoint, it kind of makes sense for the team. It's not that great for fans. I don't know if there's a whole lot you could really do about it. If you're a season ticket holder, you know, it shouldn't be a huge impact to you, but everyone going to get, like, 300-level seats, you're probably paying a little bit more through the nose for a game you want to see, and they're paying a little bit less to go sit up in the nosebleed sections to watch Jacksonville. You know, someone like me considering a trip this year, yes, potentially a trip to MetLife this year, later on down the road, thinking about it, got to incorporate the plane cost, right, and in a hotel. I'd probably just stay with mom or whatever. But anyway, I'd probably go to one of the not-so-great games to save myself a few bucks. But hey, you know, to each their own. But this is really just typical price setting. In any other business, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. There were some Jets fans that were upset about this. But it's not that I'm really defending it. Yeah, it sucks because you're spending more to see games you want. But that's capitalism. If you have a problem with this, see you in Russia, dude. I mean, seriously, I don't know what else to tell you. This is what it is. This is the epitome of capitalism, and the Jets could pull it off because someone will pay to see the Buffalo Bills on Thursday night. They'd pay more to see that than they would to see the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's just common sense. But it's a topic we needed to cover nonetheless. Also in Jets news this week, over the past couple weeks, I should say, Mr. Mike Maccagnan has been going on a little bit of a shopping spree getting new scouts, which is great. He's got a whole new bunch of scouts that he's picked up, and we're just going to touch on some of the names and a little bit of their background here. Lee Gissendaner, an area scout from the Green Bay Packers, and he's a former Ron Wolf guy, so you can see the connection there. Jim Jouch, if I'm going to butcher these names, you guys know I butcher names, so hey. I totally understand it. And we do have a caller on. I'm going to bring you on, and hopefully you're not a raving lunatic. Hello, caller. Welcome to CNC Football Factory.
Well, Carlos, I don't know if you consider me a raving lunatic or not, but I got one question for you. Is CJ still in mourning over the Rangers? Is that why he's not here?
No, actually, he took that surprisingly well. No, he's actually at work right now. So he's probably mourning but no. No, he actually took it better than I thought he would.
I'm very surprised. I felt bad for him. You know, this is Dennis. So I just wanted to – I heard you talking about the variable pricing, and I'm going to say as a season ticket holder, I actually like it, and here's why. And I think other season ticket holders that have this kind of pricing as well like it, and it's for this reason. When you – in the past, when you bought your 10 games, you were paying – the same amount of money for the preseason games as you were for your regular season games, and you weren't getting the same product. And the thing was, to sell a regular season game, like they're saying, a marquee game like New England or like opening day, is a little bit easier than to sell a preseason game, especially that fourth one when they play Philadelphia on a Thursday night and nobody plays. You know, you're looking at the guys who are trying to make that 52nd, 53rd man on the roster kind of thing. And, you can't really even make $10 on it, let alone you're basically stuck eating the ticket or going. So by lowering the cost of the preseason, if you can sell the preseason, get a little bit of money back, hey, great. But, you know, if you do decide that during the year, hey, I want to try to sell a couple, make a little bit of the money back, and some of these tickets are more in demand, like New England, like Miami. Again, I forget which ones were the marquee games. The premier games are basically what the prices would be if they had just kind of left everything even. So it's a little bit better.
That's kind of like the base price, the premier. And the premier are Washington, Jacksonville, Miami, Tennessee. I see the benefit to a season ticket holder that wants to get out of, a particular game. And it's a little bit easier. It helps the season ticket holder because if you're going to try to sell it, you know, the base cost of a marquee game is going to be similar to what you're trying to – offload it for. There's not the competition, you know, outside of you trying to sell it. And the preseason games, they're a little bit lower. So I think it helps. I saw some season ticket holders kind of complaining about it, so I wanted to talk about it and really just bring to light. It's not really that bad. I saw some complaints. I wasn't really sure why. So I felt that was something we should probably talk about on the show today. So thank you, Dennis, for bringing that also
our
attention.
Yeah, I mean, basically what they've done is they've lowered the price of the preseason and added them to games in the regular season. In my opinion, again, and we'll get off of this, is just that you almost can't sell the preseason games. They're very hard to sell, but you can if you want to sell them. Again, if you have 10, if you have 8 home games, and you say I want to go to 6 of them and make my money back on these games at least, and I have 4 seats, you could probably sell those games. And now you've lowered the cost of the preseason, which you couldn't really make any money back on. Maybe you didn't want to go to the preseason anyway. Got a question for you, Carlos. I wanted to get your opinion on something, and unfortunately, CJ is not here to offer up as well. But I guess you'll have to do. I wanted to talk a little about the offensive line. I want to talk a little about the offensive line because I know you guys have touched upon receiver and running back and kind of the skill positions and these camp battles and things have cleared up a little bit as far as the Jets are probably carrying 3 quarterbacks on their active roster. Obviously, they can't do what they did last year, which was have Matt Sims is kind of, the backup kind of guy on the practice squad. He was able to sneak through waivers. They're not going to try to sneak Bryce Petty through waivers. He won't clear. So, but I'm going to give you 9 offensive linemen. That's what I'm going to give you. I'm going to say they're going to carry 9. And I was wondering if you could give me the name right now that you would think would be the 9 on the squad going into the season.
All right, so if we're going to go with 9, I mean, you've got Mangold, you've got Brick, they're going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to carry Giacomini, he's going to be there. James Carpenter's going to be there. Let's see, Winters is more than likely going to be there. So that's what, we got 5, right?
And yeah, what about a Colon? You want to throw Colon in there?
I'm waiting until later on to talk about Willie Colon.
Okay.
I think you're going to have Jarvis Harrison, who we drafted this year.
Okay.
You're going to have a Bushi, and I like Dakota Dozier being there. So I think we're pushing 8 at this point. So now we've got Benny Jalan is another name. I see him. I see Willie Colon we're starting to talk about the cut line here as far as, you know, then some other guys after that that are, you know, not really consequential. Brent Cavale, which, I mean, you know, who the heck is that? Sean Huey, which, you know, who the heck is that? But I think you're starting to really look at, is Willie Colon going to be on the roster? And you've listened to the show. I'm not the biggest fan. I think he's a liability. It just seems like at the worst times he gets the worst penalties that just kill drives. And I know it might be a little bit more perception than the numbers might bear out, but it's incredibly frustrating. And he's just getting a year older. So, I mean, I wouldn't mind if he wasn't there, especially with him now with some of the things he was talking about this offseason, just in the past couple weeks, talking about Geno Smith has the keys to a Porsche, you better not wreck it. And I don't think Coach Bowles wants that kind of mouth around his locker room. I know he's a respected veteran, but to me, he's a penalty machine. So, Dennis, your thoughts on that?
Well, let's go over the number. I'm giving you nine. So let's go over who you have right now. You have DeBrickashaw, obviously. You're going to say Carpenter's going to start at left guard. Let's just throw him in there. Mangold's your starting center. Right guard, what's the stick Winters in there? So you mentioned his name. Let's just stick him in there as a starter right now, just to make it simple. And you got Giacomini playing right tackle. So that's what you have as your starters, and that's five. Now we're looking at four backups, and you mentioned Dakota Dozier. Winters, you have as a start. We have him as a starter now. Dakota Dozier, Ode Abouche, Harrison, and I'm trying to think. Well, Colon you don't want. So you got 1, 2, 3 backups. I'm trying to see here.
Ben Ejelana.
That's Colon. Oh, Ejelana. Okay. I just jotted it down. So 1, 2, 3, 4. So that would be your four backups right now the way you have it. Dozier, Abouche, Harrison, and Ejelana. Who knows if one of them would start in place of Winters, but let's just leave it as it is. So I guess my question to you is this. Is you're saying you think Colon doesn't make the team, which is very possible. But what about Dalton Freedman?
Yeah, he's also there, and he's a guy that's going to be fighting, and he might push one of these other guards out. It's entirely possible because he could back up the center position, which is important.
Yeah,
so,
he's
going to be fighting right there.
If you don't have Dalton Freedman, who is your backup center? Let's just say you did have to, because again, nine is a pretty realistic number. I don't see him carrying more than nine. They could carry eight, but we're going to give you nine. And if you had Dozier, Abouche, Harrison, and Ejelana, then Freeman's off the team. So who's your backup center? I think they were giving Dakota Dozier and even Winters some runs at center to see if they could do it. So maybe they're considering that, letting Dalton Freedman, you know, because it is a numbers game and you got to kind of weigh all options.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the problem with some of the guys that they have at the guard position specifically, they're guys that are not going to clear waivers. You can't just hide them on the practice squad. You can't. They're not going to clear. Willie Colon, if you cut him, mm-hmm. That's fine. But paying Carpenter way too much money to consider not having him play. You've got Winters, who he showed some promise. He's also shown some boneheaded plays, too. Abouche was good in spurts. So you're not going to clear those guys and stick them on the practice squad. Someone else will scoop them up. So it's going to be a difficult decision. I agree in the sense that I don't think you're going to carry more than nine because you, on other parts of the roster, which you and I have talked about before, they're probably carrying a heavy amount of DBs and a heavy amount of defensive linemen because Coach Bowles is going to rotate those positions in and out. So like we've talked about in the past, you have to make sacrifices somewhere. And this may be one of those positions where, I mean, I don't see us carrying 10. I agree with you there. I don't. And so it's going to be very difficult to see. I mean, there's going to be competition. One of these other young guys may not be there. Who knows? Winters may stink this offseason. He may be gone. Mm-hmm. It's entirely possible.
Well, I guess my question is this, and I heard you talking a little bit earlier about, you know, developing linemen and this type of thing, how you're probably not going again. There was really no this free agency period. There were no left tackles available, true left tackles, and a lot of the right, like Brian Beluga, if I pronounce his name right, the right tackle for the Green Bay Packers, like he got signed before the season started. A lot of the better tackles get signed anyway. So you're right. I mean, you know, one of the guys though I want to bring up real quick before I forget it, it's on the top of my mind, was Orlando Franklin, I thought would have been a great fit here. I know he went to San Diego. I'm just, you know, James Carpenter was kind of the second choice to him. But, you know, what do you think was the reason why they didn't go a little harder after Orlando Franklin?
You know, it's hard to say. I think they were angling towards Iapuati a little bit, and then he ended up not signing with the Jets, obviously. I think there was the James Carpenter. That one, I still scratch my head, because I would have put Franklin over him as well. But it may be that there wasn't a ton of interest coming over to play for this team on his camp. You know, again, I wasn't there. I wasn't negotiating. I can't really say why they wouldn't have targeted him specifically. I liked Franklin, too. And I think we ended up with, let's be frank, James Carpenter, he's okay. But that was one of the weaker signings, in my opinion, of this offseason.
Yeah, he's a little injury prone. James Brewer came from the Giants, and I know a lot of, you know, I have a good friend of mine is Giant fans, like, you know, don't count on James Brewer making your team. I guess the point is that you're talking about development, and you talk about Brian Winters, and yeah, he's had some struggles, and you talk about a Boucher or Strong, but these are young guys. I mean, Dakota Dozier is a young guy. We have no idea what he is. I mean, he kind of had his red shirt year last year, came out of Furman, you know, a smaller school, so he might have needed that redshirt year. I mean, Harrison is interesting because, you know, that's a McCagnan pick. I'm sure he's going to want to keep his own guy, even if he doesn't play much.
Yeah, that's why I put him toward the top of the list of he's not getting cut. I mean, unless he just doesn't show up at all. I know there were some questions about his motor, but, I mean, he has to be really bad or get injured to not make the roster, in my opinion, particularly because it is a McCagnan pick. I'm not saying that would be the case in all instances, but for that position – I think he'd get the benefit of the doubt unless he just really loses ground to some of these other guys that have been there maybe an extra year. And he'd have to be pretty bad to not make it.
Yeah, here's something I just wanted to bring up real quick, and then maybe we can move on to another question for you. But, you know, Dakota Dozier in college was a left tackle. Now, he may start off at guard or get some run in there if he makes a team. Same thing with Abouche. He's he was a tackle in college, has got some run at guard, which makes some sense, you know, kind of starting at the easier position. You know, I'm just wondering, again, if these guys can kind of move forward and develop. They're young guys. Even Brian Winters, I think, was a tackle. I think it was a right tackle at Kent State, if I remember correctly. I understand that people look at sometimes the turnstile aspect of some of these younger guys, but you know what? Players do develop and get better, and you can only hope that a guy who's 23 or 24 has a couple of games under his belt, can improve, get more familiar with the speed of the game, and maybe some of these guys can actually, when DeBrickishaw Ferguson is ready to move on, maybe there's somebody on this current roster that develops and can play left tackle, one of these guys. I think Harrison's more of a guard. I don't know if he's ever played tackle. Maybe, I think he might have played a little left tackle in college, but again, the point is this, like you're saying, You gotta be a little bit patient with some of these players and let them get out there. And even if they have their struggles, look, very few people waltz into the NFL, especially late round picks, and just go out there and perform. It happens, but most teams and most good teams, their later round picks, if you look at them, it was funny. I was looking at a sheet of all the picks from the league. And after the third round, I'm like, I don't know who these guys are for any of these teams. But you know what? Some are going to stick. Some are going to get a little time on the special teams, and then some are going to eventually be starters. So that's kind of the way good teams do it, and you give the guys a chance to develop, get their feet wet, and you hopefully end up with somebody who's very solid for a long time.
Yeah, and one thing to add to that, Dennis, is I think we still have some holes on the offensive line, but we have a good problem in the sense that outside of a couple guys, and I know that our starters are aging, but the guys behind them are all fairly young. They're all pretty young, and they could develop. We had Abushi, and I think it was Abushi and Winders, who pretty much just didn't – their first year, they didn't even touch the field at all. I believe that was the case with them, and then also with
Winters
Dozier
did.
Last year.
I think Winters did.
Winters might have, but Abushi didn't. But still, I mean, you know, and they had time to kind of get their feet wet, get into the game a little bit, and Abushi's contributed. In his second year, he did okay. He started some games. He blew some plays. Let's not lie. But, you know, they're coming into their own. They're all pretty young. And I think that's a better problem to have than to have an aging starting unit and not really a whole lot behind them that is also aging. So, I mean, in terms of having an issue, at least we got some young guys that may develop. You know, if you hit on one or two of these guys to start for you, that's not bad. And that's why you need to constantly invest in the offensive line.
No. I definitely agree. You know, it's kind of the motor that makes the car run, right?
Absolutely. You know, if you have if you got some great tires and you've got, you know, some good-looking rims and you got your car painted real nice, whatever color or things you're into, you could have all the gadgets in the world. But if your motor's not running, that car's not going anywhere. It's just a giant pile of junk. And that the offensive line is somewhat like your motor.
Yeah, definitely. Look, it controls the running game. It controls the passing game. And, you know, look. I mean, I just always use the Dallas Cowboys as an example. You know, poor Tony Romo was always the choke artist. But when they took the pressure off him, they gave him this really top-notch offensive line that they built through the draft. And DeMarco Murray, who's not there anymore, but ran for 1,800 yards. But, yeah, when they got tight, he still had the weapons around him. He still had the experience to have a great year. I mean, you look at his – I think he led the league in quarterback rating. He had, like, 34 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. You know, he could still get the ball in the end zone. He could still move the ball through the air, but he wasn't throwing 600 passes. You know, he wasn't relied upon.
I think Dallas definitely learned to lean more on that run game, invest in the offensive line. I think it was a couple of years ago when they were fighting for a playoff spot. It was a real tough game with Green Bay at the very end, and they basically abandoned the run game and had Tony Romo chucking it, like, I want to say 30 times in the second half. They ended up losing that game because they didn't stick with the run game. I think after that, Jason Garrett kind of learned, all right, we need to run more efficiently. Our offensive line's getting better. Tony Romo's getting older, so he's not going to have the escapability he had of 5 years ago, which kind of made his offensive line look a little bit better than it was in years past. So, you know, and they just invested in the guy, and he was getting old. So, yeah, you needed to invest in that offensive line. They made some good, solid choices in the draft. You know, they invested resources, first-round picks into these guys. And I think going forward, we're going to have to see some of that.
Yeah, look at, like, Zach Martin, for example. Remember the picture of, like, Jerry Jones and, like, Johnny Manziel? Was it, like, was Jerry Jones going to go for Johnny Manziel, the splash pick? But instead he took Zach Martin, a guard. Not a very sexy pick, but you know what? It really turned out to work out well for them. And, you know, now they got Lyle Collins kind of, you know, it was his whole story. And, you know, they really have some depth there. And you know what? The interesting thing with Dallas was that down the stretch, as you talked about, they were kind of 8-8, and they went in that last game of the year, and they needed that game, and they always kind of lost it, and they didn't get in. They ended up losing the play-in game. It was actually a playoff game at the end of the season, maybe 2 or 3 years in a row that happened to them. But this year, as they went down the stretch, I mean, they lost to Philadelphia on Thanksgiving, but then they went down the stretch. But you know what? They just physically dominated games, and that's why they ended up going like 12-4 instead of like going 8-8. Because they were able to just kind of run the ball, physically dominate. Teams are getting injured. They're getting banged up. And now you're going up against this physical offensive line. They're controlling the game. Their defense wasn't great, the Cowboys. We knew that a year ago. Their defense was terrible. So they shortened the game. They took some pressure off Romo. And man, it really worked. And you look at them now, they're probably the favorites to win the NFC East again. And like you're saying, it's so important to have that good offensive line. Let's hope some of these guys develop and give us some length. One quick question before I get to my other thing. If the Brickershore, a lot
hold
of
on,
people
hold
are
on,
saying,
hold on, Dennis, I wanted to ask you a question first because you kind of jogged something in my, you know, that I was thinking about. That I was talking about earlier with the Mo Wilkerson contract. So, the Dallas Cowboys offensive line is the NFL. I guess the NFL Network came out with kind of like their top scariest position groups, and the offensive line was rated as like the top position group out of all position groups. Now, also in that list, we have two groups of the New York Jets. We have the cornerbacks for the New York Jets at number 4 and the defensive line at number 8. I would kind of flip that personally, but say whatever you will about that. Now, my question to you centers around the defensive line of the Jets. With Mo Wilkerson, do you think trading from a position of strength at the defensive line, trading Mo Wilkerson really makes a ton of sense to do? Like, would the Cowboys trade someone on their offensive line just because they have too many good linemen, not good enough defensive players? I just want to get your thoughts on that thought process. I've seen some fans kind of talking about, oh, we might get rid of Mo. I think monetarily it could still work keeping Mo Wilkerson. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to get your thoughts, obviously, since you are the great numbers.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Well, here's really the issue about – you know, paying Mo and having Leonard Williams on the roster. I know people are saying they're going to use 4-man fronts and this and that, but here's the thing. You can't pay Mo Wilkerson starter money. You know, Mo Wilkerson plays about 90% of the snaps when he starts. I mean, he plays some games, he almost never leaves the field. He's a 3-down player, and he should be paid like that. And that's what, when he gets his next contract, whenever he gets it from whomever he gets it from, he's going to be paid starter money because he is a starter. He's a 3-down player. And the problem is that you didn't draft Williams at 6th overall, not to have him at least develop or hopefully sooner rather than later into a three-down player as well. Now, you're obviously never taking Sheldon Richardson off the field. I mean, when you don't have to. I mean, a little bit, but he's kind of playing the same snaps. He led the teams in sacks last year, and he could take a big step forward. I think it really comes down to, do you have enough – you do have too many people and too few seats. That's what the problem is here. I mean, like you're saying, well, why are they trade away – well, Lyle Collins right now, I mean, he's costing the Dallas Cowboys next to nothing because he was an undrafted free agent. So you can't pay Lyle Collins 10 left tackle money and pay Tyrone Smith left tackle money, and then Zach Martin becomes a free agent. You got to pay him, you know, guard money. That's – and if they're not on the field. So that's – and this doesn't mean that Todd Bowles can't tweak his defense to ensure that there's enough snaps for everybody. But that's really the issue facing the Jets right now. And I don't think this was a calculated move when they drafted Williams. I think they said, oh, this is a good guy on the board. We like him. But now I do believe this, and it's from my head, not from my heart. I feel like they're looking at it saying, if Williams can give us the kind of production that Wilkerson can, and who knows, he's still an unknown, moving forward. I mean, let me ask you this question. If I told you Sheldon Richardson's next contract was $150 million guaranteed, $100 million, $50 million guaranteed, would you think I had six heads?
Well, if you're taking
something
Sheldon
like
Richardson,
that,
you're using kind of Sue, and I know Sue is making more and there's more guaranteed, but if you're using that as a comp and you're using some of these other bigger contracts that have come out recently as a comp, no, I don't think it would be that nuts. I could see it happening. What, 2 years from now when he has to renegotiate it? I think it's like two years?
Well, no, it's actually after this year he can. I mean, again, you're running into some issues here. I think it's about snaps first and foremost, because if Williams, let's say Williams was gone and they took Kevin White, I mean, you probably wouldn't be having this conversation about Wilkerson because, you know, what would you – but now you're kind of looking at it, and the Jets are looking at it like we have maybe a replacement. Again, I've looked at Bowles' defense, and, again, I'm not saying he's not going to tweak it or try to change it, but from what I saw from the last 2 years in Arizona, you know, his linemen are – there's three or four – you know, again, the fourth one is more of a role player, a sub player, not necessarily a starter. So unless he tweaks his defense enough to get the snaps on there, what they're saying is, okay, we have a younger player, even though we got to move on from Bowen. The worst thing would be kind of losing the free agency for nothing. And we got to pay Sheldon. Now, Sheldon, look, if Sheldon has 12 sacks next year and plays like he played, he would have some leverage to hold out going into his third year, just like J.J. Watt. I mean, I'm not saying he's the same level as J.J. Watt, but J.J. Watt didn't necessarily hold out, but he wanted a new contract after his third year when he was allowed to, even though technically they could have kept him for five. And what are the Houston Texans going to do? Not pay him? So they paid him. And you know what they get in return? This is what happens. What you get in return is you get some of the guaranteed money in the future, meaning not at signing. So some of J.J. Watt's money, his $50 million guaranteed, is not upon signing, but next year, like $20 million plus next year gets guaranteed. But if J.J. Watt has a 20-sack season in 2015, guess what? They'll happily give him the guaranteed money. So that's kind of the trade-off you get by signing a guy earlier to say, look, we're going to give you some more money now, but to protect us because we're giving you more money earlier, we're going to put some of your guarantees in the future like 5 days into the 2016 season or 5 days into the 2017 season. So as far as Wilkerson goes, look, if Williams wasn't there, I would say it would be – they 2 months ago I would never said Wilkerson wasn't going to be on this team one way or another for at least another couple of years. But now I'm just wondering if you're thinking about it long-term and saying, we have a young guy. We think he can produce just as much as Mo, and we don't have enough snaps to really justify paying him the money. And that's the way I feel. So, you know, I agree in the sense
that you're saying the team is probably looking at it and saying, I wonder, you know, can Williams give us as much as Wilkerson? The problem they're having is they're having to address the contract now because it's been ignored. They're having to address it now. It's going to become an issue in this offseason. He's already not coming to mandatory mini camp next week. That's still up in the air. I wouldn't expect to see him. But they have to make a decision on Mo very soon, and Williams is the unknown, and that he's going to be unknown until he hits the field later on this year. And so you're caught in that catch-22.
But Carlos, let me ask you this. Do you think that Wilkerson – I mean, again, if you're going to hold out – I mean, I'm talking about truly holding out. I'm talking about going into training camp and not reporting, okay? And then you have to face all the fines and the forfeitures depending how far you go. The longer you go, the worse it gets for you. Now Mo Wilkerson is making about $7 million this year. And that's not
right.
chump change, because that's about double than what he was set to make, than what he's made any year previous. Okay? I'm talking cash in hand. Even when he got his big signing bonus his first year, I mean, so he, I don't think he looks at it and says, he might just have to suck it up and say, you know what? I'm just going to show up, do it, play out the year, and see what happens. Look, the Jets could, there are a lot of possibilities here, a lot. The Jets could extend him and then look to trade him off the extension next year. The Jets could franchise him next year and look to trade him. The Jets could say, hey, we want to keep you, franchise him, and work out a long-term deal. There's so many possibilities. I'm just saying, a couple of months ago, we would not have even been discussing this, and now the situation is very, very cloudy. My opinion is Wilkerson probably won't hold out. If he does hold out a mini camp, you know, he's got to be all in. If he holds out a mini camp and then shows up for training camp, why'd you give up the $72,000 in fines? I mean, you know, just go to the mandatory stuff, go through the year, get into free agency, and then you know what? Then you hold the cards. Because right now, the Jets kind of hold the cards. I know Williams is an unknown, but again, you drafted the guy sixth overall. You didn't draft him to be a role player. You drafted him to be a potential star. And the only way he's going to be able to show his talents is if he's out on the field. And again, my point is one chair, two people, who sits in the chair? Third and seven? Is it Sheldon Richardson and Mo Wilkerson, or is it Sheldon Richardson and Leonard Williams? That's my point on that. So what do you have to say about my analysis?
No, I agree with you. I mean, the draft obviously impacted this. This wasn't really a topic of discussion.
Yeah.
I don't think the Jets dreamed of having Williams sitting there staring him at the face in six. I don't think they thought that was going to be a possibility. So now it's an issue. It's cloudy, like you said. It's something that they have to address. And I agree with you in the sense that I think Mo Wilkerson will – and he'll probably show up. I don't think he's going to have the hardline stance because he doesn't have a ton of leverage this year. Last year he missed a few games, you know, from injury and stuff, which is fine. But if he comes out and plays well this year, he could really earn himself top dollar next year.
Yeah, definitely. Look, if he hits unrestricted free agency, the Jets just let him go. But here's, again, I hate to say this about the money because I think they could work out the money like you're saying, but it – if Williams turns out, again, from a production standpoint, if they say, you know, we can get out of Williams a similar production, maybe better, who the heck knows. But if they feel that way, and we can let Mo Wilkerson just leave, and unfortunately, I hate to say this, not that my heart doesn't tell me this, but and we save the resources that we would put into Wilkerson and we can put them other places. Again, it's not just like that those resources just disappear. They can then be used in other areas, like maybe re-signing Damon Harrison. Re-signing DeMario Davis. DeMario Davis is he's heading to free agency after this year, and maybe they want to give him an extension this year. I don't know. So, again, Jeremy Curley, I bring up a point about Jeremy Curley. I mean, kind of quietly, Jeremy Curley's contract was extended last year, and he's making $2 million this year. But the thing is this, when the player is in the final year of his contract, and, you know, once they get through the season, then if it's up to them, if they want to go to free agency, they can. There's nothing stopping the team unless they're going to use the franchise tag, and that's $12 million. So Jeremy Curley isn't worth using a $12 million tag on. So a lot of the players, like maybe Damon Harrison isn't worth the franchise tag. Maybe DeMario Davis isn't worth the franchise tag. So it might behoove them to kind of take a look at these guys and say, all right, who can we extend now? And it's bird in hand, like, oh, I get a nice signing bonus. I get some structure moving forward. I'll take that halfway through the season, and I'll be locked up long term. So, again, these are some things that you look at and say, you know, are we giving up one thing from the left side to get something on the right? And there are questions moving forward, and you could always use resources. And, you know what, it's about allocation of resources. And I just wonder if both Williams and Wilkerson – occupy the same spot, and it's not a good allocation of resources. I think the Jets are looking at it like that. I'm not saying that I want that to happen, but honestly, to tell you the truth, I like the million-dollar question, Carlos. You know I like the million-dollar question. Ask me right now, give me $1 million if I get it right. I got a strange feeling that Wilkerson plays out his contract and goes off to free agency. That's what I think. I don't want that to happen, but that's the way I feel.
Well, that's definitely a possibility. There's no reason for him to not show up. There's no reason for the Jets that they have to hammer out this deal during this offseason or during the season. They don't have to. They may decide, we're not going to touch the situation once the season starts. Absolutely. So, Dennis, you had some questions for me. I did not want to gloss over them. So.
Yes, I did. I wrote them down, make sure I didn't forget them. First of all, was this? I mean, DeBurgus Shaw Ferguson, you know, he hasn't missed a game. We know he's in a little bit of decline. He's not the premier left tackle that he was a number of years ago. But I just wanted to ask you this question: if DeBurgus Shaw Ferguson's career ended just tomorrow, it was just over, he retired like Anthony Davis did from the 49ers, would you look back on his career and say, you know what, when was he drafted? 2006, right? Yeah, 2006, fourth overall. Would you look back and say, you know what, for fourth overall draft pick, for what he gave us for 10 years or whatever it's been, I'd take that. I'd take that any day of the week and twice on Sunday. Would you say that, or would you say, no, I would like a little bit more, maybe a couple more years out of him would kind of cement his legacy? What would be your opinion on that?
I guess, I don't know if I can answer it in the way you phrased it, but I think what I'll do is answer it in a grade. Like you would get on a test at school, or you would give at the draft. And I would say his entire career, he started off great, and I think as he's aged and he's had to also protect his side of the line with some pretty poor guard play, I would for the most part take that. There's a lot of left tackles that get taken at number four that are complete and utter busts. And the one thing you can say about DeBrick Shaw Ferguson is you could pencil him in to start and be your left tackle for, we're going on 9 years, or 10, something like 9 or 10 years now. I would take that. I would give that a nice B plus. Now, do I think he's declined over the past couple of years? Yes. But, I mean, he's still a starting left tackle in the NFL that's done fairly well. He has declined over the years, and he's not going to be worth his contract next year. But for the most part, I would take it because I've seen a lot of left tackles go that really bottomed out. But I wouldn't give an A-plus stellar pick. Either.
Look at Jake Long. I mean, he was probably considered one of the. I'm sorry, Carlos. B plus, you're going to give him. Jake Long. Jake Long was probably considered one of the top left tackles a few years ago. Now he's 30 and he's still floating out there. I mean, because he's had injuries. Here's one thing about DeBurgus Shaw. Again, he's played all these games in a row. It takes a toll on your body, you know, physically too. I mean, maybe again, we're saying he's in decline. That just happens. Period. As you get older, but also a guy who's played all those games and it does take a toll on your body. So, I mean, just being able to have him out there and solidify that line for all that whole time, I hear what you're saying about the B+. I do think that if his career ended tomorrow, I think he would look back and say, you know, if I had a fourth overall pick and I knew he would be here for 10 years and play every game at the kind of level that DeBurgus Shaw played, I would take that. I would definitely take that, and I'd be pretty satisfied with that. If you don't mind, can I ask you another question?
Ask away, Dennis. You're the only person who wants to talk to me today.
Well, like I said, CJ's in mourning about his Rangers, and you know, I still think that Henrik Lundqvist is a better goalie than Ben Bishop. I feel bad for Lundqvist. Anyway, I want to ask a little about Tommy Bohannon because I think he's kind of an interesting guy. You know, we're looking at he was a tight end in college. Now he plays fullback, and the Jets are going to need a fullback. I know that Shane Gailey's offense doesn't utilize the fullback a lot, but you're going to have some power formations where you're close to the goal line, et cetera. You got to have a guy who would be a lead blocker. But the thing is this, what about, you know, I'm not in love with, let's put it this way, with like, what's his name? Who is that? The baby Gronkowski. I can't think of his name.
Sudfeld?
Sudfeld. I'm not in love with Sudfeld. I'm not even in love with Cumberland. But, you know, Amaro, I know he's at the back thing. Let's hope that's okay. But it's probably Amaro, Cumberland, and then take your guess. Is it Kellen Davis? Is it Sudfeld? But I'm wondering if you could use Tommy Bohannon, if he can fit in this offense a little bit as like an H-back. He seems to have soft hands, like he's had a decent number of receptions, and he was a tight end in college, and he can kind of run after the catch for a big guy, you know, nothing spectacular. But I feel this. When the ball's thrown at Tommy Bohannon, he's going to catch it. That's the way I feel. So do you think that he could be utilized, maybe, you know, a little bit of versatility there enough to kind of keep him on the roster as a fullback / H-back?
I personally am a Tebow 2.0 fan, Tommy Bohannon. I think last year when he broke his collarbone, I think he finished the game. And then he's like, oh, yeah, I broke my collarbone. I'm not 100% sure on that. But, I mean, he's a tough, grinded-out guy. He is versatile, and he showed that in his first year. He could catch passes out of the backfield. I think he could find a role on this team. J.C. Copeland's out there as another fullback. I don't see that really lasting. But if there is going to be a fullback, it would be Tommy Bohannon. I'd like to see him stick because I think he could be utilized in that H-back type of role and also to provide again, not that it happens very often, provide a little punch when needed in, you know, tighter formations when you need to get that extra yard. He could either take it or also clear up some space for an Ivory.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely think that you know, maybe some potential to see a little bit more out of him in the offense than you have in the past, because they're probably not going to play as much power football, but I do think there's a role.
Uh-oh. Oh, we have dropped Dennis, our caller, so I'm sure he'll be calling back soon enough. But, you know, as we go on, we were talking about Tommy Bohannon. I'm sure Dennis will be back. Let's talk a little bit more. We were catching up on the all-new scouts, Jim Josh, Lee Gessendaner. Josh was from the Browns, Zach Trudy from the Bears, an area scout there, Xavier Adibidi from, I'm sorry, where was that? He's from the Cowboys, Dom Green coming from the Chiefs, and Brian Shields coming out of the Rams. I mean, these are, you know, obviously you don't know exactly what all these guys really spent their time doing, right? I mean, he's remaking the scouting department in his image. He's getting guys that have been area scouts for other NFL teams working for him. We don't have kind of the incestuous situation that we had before. So I like what he's doing. I see that he is definitely, you know, McKagan I'm speaking of, definitely working to fill those spots, get some more scouts out there. And I actually look forward to see what we end up doing with what we would consider his guys, Mike McKagan's guys, actually doing the scouting out there. So very, very interesting stuff there. Let's talk a little bit, and we talked about it before when I was talking with Dennis. The NFL Network released their top 10 scariest position groups in the NFL. Again, let's run through it. The Cowboys' offensive line is 1. The Bills' D-line is 2. The Rams' D-line is 3. They have the Jets' cornerbacks at 4. 5 is the Seattle safeties. 6 is the Eagles' running backs. I guess they're scariest in terms of guys who may get injured. I don't know if I necessarily agree with throwing them up there. I know DeMarco Murray is definitely a pretty good player, and Ryan Matthews has had his fair share of success, and so has Darren Sproles. But you got to wonder, you just hold your breath any time that the Philadelphia Eagles have one of those guys, you know, Ryan Matthews or DeMarco Murray out there. I think we have our caller Dennis back. So, Dennis, let's see if we can continue our conversation.
I'm sorry, Carlos. I don't know what happened. I just all of a sudden got cut off. I just wanted to ask you one more question before I said goodbye, and I do appreciate getting the opportunity to chat with you a little bit. I wanted to ask about Brandon Marshall's contract. You know, they gave him more money. And I thought it was kind of strange. I understand that why they gave him more money. I guess they promised him when he was traded for that he would get more money. But he just got a contract. I believe it was an extension, or was he free agent? I don't remember. Who cares? With Chicago last year, and he made like $14 million. And I'm just wondering, you know, if he had stayed in Chicago, he would have been playing under his contract where he was scheduled to make $7.5 million. I understand why they gave him more money, but do you really think that he kind of deserved it? I mean, he signed a contract of which he played 1 year and then was traded. And, you know, I just found it kind of strange that, again, the Jets have really, I think you told him, Mo Wilkerson, the Jets have taken care of everybody pretty much. You know, they're taking care of everybody, Revis, Cromartie, Buster Screen, you know, David Harris, even Damon Harrison, I know, with the tender. Now they gave Marshall more money, you know, Marcus Gilchrist. Everybody seems to get money, James Carpenter. Everybody's gotten money, but Mo Wilkerson. But I just thought it was a little strange that he was going to get a pay increase, you know, given the fact that he had signed this contract with Chicago.
Well, not only that, I believe, and I have to go back and double check, but I believe there was actually an extension involved in that too, wasn't there? Didn't they extend him out a year on top of that?
I think what it was, they added money to this year and guaranteed it. Again, off the top of my head, don't quote me. They added money this year and guaranteed it. They added money to next year and guaranteed it for injury only and decreased his money for the third year. So I think that he's still playing under the same contract. They just changed the terms around a little bit. I just feel like, you know, he's coming off of his worst season of his career. I mean, since he was a rookie. I mean, he had those, you know, big years behind him. And I just, you know, I kind of just wonder, again, like, I was a little surprised. I understand, and here's another way to look at it. Again, with Percy Harvin, we discussed a little bit about Percy Harvin, about waiting. And I know that, you know, I gave a simplistic kind of scenario the last time I talked about Percy Harvin, but you know, if the Jets really wanted to keep Percy Harvin and they wanted to save the draft pick, just like Marshall waited. I mean, the Jets could have said, hey, you're on the team, tough. We're not going to give you the money. I don't care if we did promise it to you. Same thing with Percy Harvin. They could have said to him, look, we have this offer on the table. It's you sign it on this day so we don't lose our fourth-round draft pick. And go out and test the field. Because if they released Percy Harvin, he could have tested the field anyway. He could have said, you know, I want to see what's out there. I want to test the water. And you know what? Come back to us if you don't like the offers you get. On this day, this offer stands open. You know, Jonathan Vilma did that for the Saints when the Jets traded him to the Saints. He waited a whole season before getting a contract extension to save them one spot in the draft, you know, from a third round to a second round. So, you know, again, we talked a little about Percy Harvin and about – here's the thing I'm a little concerned about is restructuring somebody's contract like Darrelle Revis next year. And that's the only thing I would hate to see them do because – you know, Revis is getting a little older. We don't know how much time he has left. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be bad. He might have 3 or 4 years. I don't know. But I wouldn't like to see them take that $17 million and prorate it out because I don't know if he's going to finish his entire contract, and maybe that wouldn't be the smartest move. Again, this is where you start to get into this little bit of trouble. And you had mentioned to me how would the Jets have kept Percy Harvin on the roster. And one of the things was a restructure. And a lot of people said that Percy Harvin said he wouldn't restructure his contract. But that's not true. What Percy Harvin said was he wouldn't take a pay cut. Am I correct? Does restructure mean pay cut?
No, a restructure does not mean a pay cut. But I don't think that was on the table. I think they were asking him to take less money. Again, I wasn't.
No, I think they were. I think they were, but I'm just saying this. If they said to Percy Harvin, this is hypothetically, listen, we'll give you an $8 million signing bonus so we can prorate and drop your cap number from 10.5 to, I think it would be 4.5. And you'll make $2.5 million during the season. You're still going to make $10.5 million like you were scheduled to make. Only now the $8 million you're getting is guaranteed to you. Unlike where if we had just kept you and gave up the fourth round pick and you went into training camp and stunk it up, we could just cut you and you get nothing. You think he would have taken that deal? I mean, and kept everything else moving forward the same?
I mean, yeah. Looking back on it now, he probably would have. I think once he was able to go out there. And once the signings in Buffalo happened, and Percy came out and basically said, look, one of the big reasons why I signed in Buffalo, it doesn't look like the most conventional places, but he had formed a relationship with Sanjay Lal, and he was familiar with the coaching staff for the most part. And I think part of him signing in Buffalo is due to that. He, at least in some way, had a bond with the wide receivers coach. He trusted Rex Ryan and his staff, which is for the most part intact up there. So I think that's another reason, but that's after what your scenario is. That's post this offer that you're proposing. I think he would have taken that, but I don't think that's what it was on the table. It wasn't on the table.
No, I don't think so.
When he was able to go, but yeah, would he have taken it? Sure. And as far as your question on the Brandon Marshall restructure, getting him a little bit more money, it doesn't bother me. I think this was something that was kind of pre-discussed prior to the trade. It was going to happen. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a wink, wink, nod, nod, we'll take care of you, you come over here, and you be a good presence in the locker room, not your crazy-ass self like you were in Miami. So let's keep the crazy guy happy. A little bit of that, too.
Well, I mean, the reason why they had to wait till that day is because you're not allowed to increase someone's salary within a year, so that's why they had to wait till that day. I just saying, I guess my point is this, is that if he had been in Chicago, it would make $7.5 million. When he was traded, we didn't realize it was this kind of behind-the-scenes kind of thing where, listen, on May 22nd or whatever day is that we're allowed to increase your salary, we'll do that to this. And they probably already had a structure in place. They just had to wait for the timing to be right. But, you know, he is making $9 million this year, and I just really hope. And you know that I kind of feel like he's 31. I'm a little concerned about the age. Now, look, maybe he bounces back and has the kind of production that he's had in the past. We only can hope so. But, you know, he's now getting paid – you know, I mean, between what he made in Chicago last year and what he's making with the Jets here, he's getting paid a pretty nice dollar. So, you know what?
He better be one. Yeah, no, he's making more number one money than like Decker. When his deal, I actually didn't mind it. A lot of people were like, oh, we're paying Decker so much money. Honestly, not really. He's getting paid high number two money. But let's talk about Brandon Marshall. If he could come back to form, and some of the injuries he had last year were a bit more freakish in nature. I really just, you know, watching him, I think he had an injury-plagued year. He wasn't right all year. He had some fractures. I think he tore up his knee at the end of the year.
Yeah, he went on IR.
Last month or so. And he finished on IR. I'm hopeful for a bounce back season. Hopefully he's healthy. He's capable of being that number one guy. Now, do I think he's going to put up the numbers that he put up in Chicago or Denver with Jay Cutler? No, that's not what this offense is going to be. I mean, he'll have a good year, but I think the ball's going to be spread around a little bit more. Maybe statistically, he may not show up. He may not be someone you want on your fantasy team to invest in early, but I think he'll be a solid number one as long as he can stay healthy. Now, how long can this production last? Really, I think you're going to start seeing decline next year, year after that, potentially. You know, 32, 33, you're starting to see, you know, your number ones start turning into your number twos,
mm-hmm.
typically. So, but
no,
the deal
Larry
is for much more than that. I mean, the deal's set up for, what, 3 years, 2 years, somewhere around there?
Well, it's a three-year deal, but they can get out of it next year as long as he's not – let's just say hypothetically he was terrible, and they said, you know what, we got someone else. We're going to draft somebody. They could release him because it's injury only for next year. It's not fully guaranteed. So they
right.
could get out of it after 1 year. I guess my point is that, look, you traded a draft pick. It was only a fifth-round draft pick. I did go to that town hall meeting, and the interesting thing was Mike Maccagnan. People are going to laugh, but he sounded a little bit more like John Issick talking about his philosophy than he did. You know, he's kind of saying, well, you know, you need to be patient. It's really going to be through the draft, and I wish I had more draft picks this year. And I kind of thought to myself, well, I know it's a fifth-round pick, but you did trade away a draft pick for Brandon Marshall, who is now making $9 million. So let's hope the combination of resources was worth it. And that's the only thing that I'm concerned about is at the end of the year, do you look back and say, boy, I mean, really, even though it's a fifth-round pick, again, Antonio Brown, who led the league in receiving last year, was a sixth-round pick. You know, maybe we would have liked to have had that pick back in the money, and we could have signed a guy like Greg Jennings or a stopgap, or even like Michael Crabtree, for example, who's 27. I realize Michael Crabtree has had some issues. He hasn't performed like he used to. He's coming off the Achilles. But could he have a bounce-back season? Sure, maybe he can, and he's 27, and maybe he's a guy who bounces back, and then you can sign him long-term. I don't know. I'm not saying this was a good move, bad move, indifferent. I just worry that at the end of the year, if you look back and you say, for the resources we gave up for this, was it worth it? And I guess we're just going to have to wait and see.
I can't agree there. I think Brandon Marshall, assuming health is there, it mm-hmm. was worth a fifth-round pick. One, we got one back through some draft day manipulations. We got back a fifth-rounder. I mean, I know you couldn't guarantee that at the time, but I still think without the bouncing around the boards on day three and getting that fifth-round pick back, I still think Marshall – for what you're getting is worth a fifth round pick. I'm not going to look back and say, oh man, you know, I wish we had, who's someone that even went in the fifth round that I really wanted? I can't even think of anyone
Richard
off the top of my head.
Richard Sherman was a fifth
round
pick.
Well, no.
Pick.
I mean,
so
this year. Yeah, there's Richard Sherman, but for every Richard Sherman, there's also a ton of busts. Brandon Marshall.
I'm just talking about the totality of the resources. You gave up a draft pick and you paid the guy $9 million. To be your number one receiver, let's hope that he is. And that again, Larry Fitzgerald, if you look at his career, his year 30 and 31 age years was where he kind of started his decline. I just hope this isn't a pattern of, okay, like you said, 32, 33, they start to become number twos. And I just hope that, again, the totality of the resources, you look back and say, yeah, I would do that every day of the week and twice on Sunday. That's all I'm worried about. I'm not talking about just the fifth-round pick. And, you know, now you've added more money to his contract. So that's my point. You took on this contract, you added a little bit more money, and you gave up a draft pick. So you've given up a decent amount of resources.
Yeah. So the one thing about Marshall that I like is the style of play he plays. He's not a true burner. He definitely can still get separation. He runs great routes. He attacks the ball, and he makes some outstanding plays with his hands. I mean, he's got pretty good athleticism, but it's not something where, you know, when you get older, the speed's going to really just fall off the tank. You know, it's not like Santonio Holmes, where Santonio Holmes was really a speed kind of guy, and then once that went and then the injury, you know, it went downhill from there. I think Marshall could last a little bit longer. And, you know, the comparison to Fitzgerald, to be fair, Fitzgerald had, like, Ryan Lindley and some other guys that they scraped off from the – underneath the bridge throwing to him for a few years too before they got Carson Palmer.
Yeah, but you know, Michael Floyd has kind of surpassed him as the number one on the team, so I mean he has the same guys throwing him the ball. I'm just making a point. Look, some guys like Andre Johnson, you know, now he's 34, he's going to Indianapolis and they still think he can be a number one. Again, DeAndre Hopkins kind of took over for him in Houston and he kind of became expendable. Again, I don't know. He is a big red zone target. is he realistically going to have 1,500 yards in this offense? Probably not. But can he help out, you know, Decker open, take some coverage away, those types of things that you don't see in the stat sheet? Sure. Can he get some separation and be a possession receiver? Sure. I just think the bottom line is here is that you want to look back and say, yeah, because we need to have more. Again, I told you, 27 touchdowns. You can't have 27 touchdowns. The Jets have to have more touchdowns. If they need to have 50, I wish they had 50. But, you know, if they get 35 to 40, I'd be thrilled. So if Brandon Marshall can give you 5 or 6 more touchdowns at the wide receiver position, hey, you know, great. Then definitely, you know what, it was worth it. I just hope that, like I said, I don't know if maybe there was other directions you could have gone, but they chose to go in this direction. We'll see if last year was just an aberration with Marshall, you know, kind of one of those things that happens, or if it was kind of what he is moving forward. Again, only time will tell. I'm just worried about the amount of resources that they put into him, and also the fact that they gave him more money was just surprising to me, because this kind of came out of nowhere. When I said, all right, well, you know, look, he's making less than Percy Harvin, so they've gotten rid of Percy Harvin, making less money. He's more of a possession receiver. He's like you said, he's not that yards after catch receiver like maybe Percy Harvin is, but he'll get open, tough catch in traffic. He's got the long arms. He's taller. So he's a different receiver, and I that aspect, I understood it. But I just really couldn't really wrap my arms around why he needed to have more money. But I guess they just, like you said, they want to keep him happy, and they kind of made this deal, and they stuck by it.
Yeah, I think that's really the crux of everything is this was kind of in the works prior to when it officially happened. That's basically what I think happened. It doesn't really upset me. It's a one-year thing, really. I mean, if he ends up getting hurt, whatever, he could get out of it. So I'm not terribly upset about it. I understand your point on the resource allocation, but there was only so many other people you were going to spend that money on. And the Jets felt they needed a true guy at the wide receiver position that has been that number one guy that's commanded the ball in the past, that has a history of success in this league doing that. They felt they needed that as opposed to what Percy Harvin offered, which was, you know, some special teams ability, some gadget plays, a really quick guy that you could set up for bubble screens and the like, which he was kind of used like that last year. I think we could have used him a little bit better last year as well. But you know, that's the direction.
Maybe they're looking at Devin Smith that way. Maybe they're looking at Devin Smith a little bit like that. Would you think that maybe some reverses and things like that, try to get him the ball in space? Would you think that would be his role?
I think they will. I think they're going to try to use him to stretch the field, but he's not going to offer you kind of the special teams play. He didn't return punts or kicks or anything like that in college. It would be pretty new to him. So expect him to contribute in that way, I wouldn't really think. But in terms of giving you a guy that could stretch the field, you know, in your regular offense, yeah, I think they'll try to use him that way. But, you know, there's three wide receivers ahead of him right now, so he's not going to be on there full-time. I still think Curley's going to be ahead of him. Devin Smith is still going to have to adjust. And I think the good thing is we don't have to rush Devin Smith on there. We don't have to sit there and hope that he is our number two. Like, we were sitting there in that situation a couple years back hoping and praying that Stephen Hill would figure out how to catch the ball.
Yeah, and you know, the interesting thing is that, you know, Devin Smith is quick, don't get me wrong. He plays quick. He probably plays quicker than his 40 time, but Stephen Hill actually ran a faster 40 time in the combine than Devin Smith did. So I realize he had drops, but look, he didn't drop every single ball. His drop ratio was not sufficient enough. But, I mean, the Panthers were hurting for wide receivers, and they didn't call up Stephen Hill. That goes to show you just, like, kind of how lackluster Stephen Hill's abilities are. And really, I think the thing with Devin Smith is, can he develop into a decent route runner? Because that's where really, I mean, I know you can send him down the field, but when that guy has the ability to catch that underneath stuff and then you get that double move, well, that's where that speed really comes in, because that corner might bite up. Say, oh, I saw this. This is a hook. Oops. You know, here he goes down the field. And, you know, the safety's on the other side worrying about Marshall or Decker. And that's where you get that home run play. So hopefully, you know, Devin can develop into a really good route runner, and that will certainly help the deep aspects of his game. But Carlos, listen, thank you very much it's great chatting a little Jet football with you. Looking forward to the mini camp. We'll see what happens. And, you know, I know you were flying solo, so, you know, please tell CJ that I'm sorry about his Rangers, and, you know, enjoying the show, and we'll talk to you soon. Okay, buddy.
All right, Dennis, thanks for calling and have a great Sunday.
You too, buddy. Take care. Bye.
All right. Okay, Dennis Agapito joining us, a good friend of the show, talking some Jets football. having a nice, easy Sunday. It is now Sunday afternoon. We started in the morning. So let's get back into it, though. We were talking about the position groups and the Jets' defensive line. They're ranked number 8. The cornerbacks ranked number 4. The only thing I would say about that, and I love the Revis signing. That was great and all. Cromartie, it's improving our cornerback play. You know, bust your screen. But to say that that group that hasn't played together, really, since 2012, you know, with Revis and Cromartie, is instantly one of these groups is, I think, jumping the gun just a little bit. The other thing I would take exception with this list is I would actually put our defensive line at number 4 and the cornerbacks at number 8, because our defensive line has been doing it for a couple years now together with Sheldon Richardson, Mo Wilkerson, Damon Harrison. Obviously, you know, this is a subjective list, so I understand that. Let's talk about a different list, the NFL Network's top 100. We've got a few players on there. We have Sheldon Richardson listed at number 55 overall, Brandon Marshall at 57, and Mo Wilkerson, more disrespect, at 74. I think that's entirely too low for him. Now, there's another player out there that I expect to see on the list that hasn't been listed yet. That's Darrell Revis. I'm expecting to see Nick Mangold somewhere here in the top 50 as well. He's one of the top centers in the league still. So I still expect to see him there. Let's talk a little bit about the Buffalo Bills and what's been going on with them. So the Jets recently signed a quarterback by the name of Heaps and brought him in as a camp guy. We already have Petty. We already have Fitzpatrick. We already have Geno. Matt Smith Sims is a guy sitting there and wondering, hey, what the heck's going on? Matt Sims asked to be released by the Jets. The Jets obliged him, and now Matt Sims is with the Buffalo Bills, rejoining Rex Ryan. I mean, he came out and said, oh, you know what? I feel a lot more comfortable here. Matt, you realize you're not going to start there either, right? I mean, you weren't going to start with the Jets. You're not going to start with the Bills. You probably would have been better off going to Jacksonville or some other team. Even with the cast of characters that the Bills have, Matt Castle, E.J. Manuel, Tyrod Taylor, I can't even believe that he's actually being talked about as being a starter, but he potentially might start, apparently, from what we're hearing. But Matt Sims, I mean, this is a four-man Royal Rumble. You may not even make the team. You might be on the practice squad. You might be in the same exact situation you were with the New York Jets. So I don't know how this is really all that much better. You see the writing on the wall. Apparently, you didn't like the way Coach Bowles looked at you or something. But, you know, that's fine. Good luck, Matt Sims. He was never really a bad guy. There was a very, very, very small contingent of Jets fans that were clamoring to see him start when Geno Smith was a rookie. I think we saw him for a few series and saw that wasn't going to work out either. But best of luck to him. So, and then, of course, we're talking about the Buffalo Bills. We're going to be talking a little bit about Rex Ryan and his mouth. And I don't think he has learned a cotton-picking thing from his experience in New York. He's sitting there, he's guaranteeing the playoffs. Okay, that's fine and good. Man, do you not learn from your mistakes? Are you just one of these people that repeatedly bash your head into the wall until it starts bleeding? You know, he reminds me of the dog that can't stop eating. If you gave him a pound of food, he'd just continue to eat until he was so fat he died from eating. Maybe not a pound, but 20 pounds of food. He would eat himself to death. I think Rex Ryan just doesn't learn from his mistakes. Man, slow your roll. I guess we should at least feel somewhat lucky in the fact that he hasn't sat here and said, you know what, we're winning the Super Bowl here in Buffalo this year, because that could have happened too. I tell you what, the more and more I look back on it now, and the more and more I hear Rex talk about all these guarantees and all this blustery bravado and some of the other things, he was getting into it with Jason Morrow in the offseason. I am so glad we don't have any of that mess to deal with here at the New York Jets. Goodbye, Rex. You know, thank you for the AFC Championship years, but you have worn out your welcome here. I am so glad that you are in Buffalo and we'll get to face you twice a year and give you a really good run. I'm not guaranteeing we'll sweep you, but we'll get one of those two at least. We'll definitely push that team, and you know what's coming, Rex. All right, let's talk a little fantasy football. So I think one of the coolest parts of the show that I get to talk about here is fantasy football. Not a lot of the other podcasts really cover fantasy football, but there's a ton of Jets fans that play fantasy football. And so we're going to start incorporating that as we get closer to the season. We're going to start doing some positional previews and start talking about some other things. Today I want to talk about the wide receiver position. Let's start off here. Let's start off with wide receiver positions, and let's look. Are there any rookies this year worth investing in and expecting a ton from? Well, last year we had Odell Beckham, Kelvin Benjamin contributed big time contributors. I mean, these weren't guys that just were your number three wide receiver. These guys filled in as your number two, and in the case of Odell Beckham, probably won you a league or two. So you can't just gloss over the rookie wide receiver position like you did in years past, where it was like, oh, well, you don't really hit your stride until year three. No, BS. Now you could expect certain wide receivers to come in different situations and contribute right away. Let's talk about a few here. First and foremost, just the first wide receiver taken, Amari Cooper, probably the cleanest, most polished wide receiver coming out in a while, really. Taken number four, Oakland Raiders. He's got a nice young quarterback. He's not going to be sharing a ton of targets, and he looks really good so far this offseason. I like me a little bit of the Amari Cooper. See if you could steal him a little bit later. Kevin White, I don't like his situation as much. I think Kevin White is a good athlete, and he's gonna compete to be the number two alongside Alshon Jeffrey, but that's not even a guarantee. So Kevin White, he's going to be fighting off, oh gosh, what's the name of that guy that replaced Brandon Marshall last year towards the end of the season? I should know this. Well, anyways, I forget his name right now, but he's going to be fighting for the number two spot. It's not guaranteed that he's going to have that number two spot. If I'm drafting fantasy-wise, I'm definitely looking at Amari Cooper, especially if you're playing PPR, which, if you ask me, is the only way you should play fantasy football at all, whether it be a half point, full point, three-quarters of a point. I think you need to play PPR points per reception, for those of you that don't know. I would look Amari Cooper's way. But there's another wide receiver out there that was drafted in the first round that could also be a contributor, stepping into a system and Chip Kelly system in Philadelphia, Nelson Agholor from USC. He's got a chance to basically step into that number two position. I think Jordan Matthews will probably take over the number one position from Jeremy Maclin. And then who's there after that? There's not a whole lot. So Nelson Agholor is another one. If you could find him later on in drafts, fifth, sixth round, seventh round, give him a chance. He won't disappoint. With all the reps going around, you saw what happened with Maclin and Jordan Matthews last year, and that was with Mark Sanchez delivering the ball. So, you know, if you get Sam Bradford in there and he's healthy slinging it in that system, Nelson Agholor might be a steal for you as well. Breshad Perriman, also taken in the first round. A lot of first-round wide receivers this year. A former UCF Knight going to Baltimore. Torrey Smith is gone. Breshad Perriman is in. So here's my thoughts on that. If you were a fan of the numbers that Torrey Smith put up last year, if you could live with the up and down, the I'm going to have 20 points one game for you, you know, 10 catches and 100 yards, or, you know, a few catches, 100 yards and a touchdown, or I'm going to have a complete bust and have two catches. If you could live with that volatility from week to week and how drastic it is, give a shot to Perriman. And he's going to be starting. I don't see anyone else that's really going to compete with him. Steve Smith is just a year older. And, Breshad Perriman's going to step right in, take that role from the guy, from Torrey Smith, as the guy that goes down the field, catches the ball when Joe Flacco throws it really, really long. The good thing about that is Joe Flacco could throw it really, really long, really, really well. But, again, it's going to be a highly volatile situation. He could fill in as a potential like wide receiver three for you, or a spot starter during the bye weeks. I wouldn't expect a ton more from him. He's quick. He's definitely quick. And he can catch, but he does have a little bit of the stone hands. I think one thing that may be going for him is the fact that Mark Trestman is now going to be coaching the offense, which should open up some opportunities. One thing about Mark Trestman's offense, if you saw what happened in Chicago, is that those offenses are geared around four or five key guys, one of them being the running back catching the ball in the backfield. And we're not talking about running backs right now, but Justin Forsett, keep him on your radar. He had a good year last year. I would expect his catches to double. I think he had like 40, and I could see him going closer to 80 catches this year in that kind of system. So I think that does help Perriman out. and the fact that there's not a ton of competition. But it's going to be a little volatile. I wouldn't count on him as much more than a three if you go three deep, or a solid bench play for a bye week fill-in if you only go two deep at the wide receiver position. Devontae Parker, another wide receiver rookie, just had foot surgery, although it's nothing serious. It's basically getting a screw changed in his foot. Think about it like changing a screw in your car. That's all they did. He should be back just fine. But he's going to have a lot more competition with Kenny Stills. You still have Jarvis Landry out there. I wouldn't bank on Devontae Parker this year, even though I think he's a good player. And then Doriel Green Beckham. Tennessee's offense has nowhere to go but up. But fantasy-wise, do you really want to invest a ton into the Tennessee Titans offense with a rookie quarterback? Is Marcus Mariota is probably going to start. And, maybe DGB, which is what I'm calling him now for short. Maybe he does some things. Maybe he doesn't. I wouldn't spend a ton of resources in the fantasy football draft where you're trying to win. If it's not money, it's pride. I wouldn't stick a ton of investment into DGB or anyone on that Tennessee offense right about now until they prove otherwise. And then Devin Smith, the New York Jets' very own Devin Smith. I think he's a great draft for the team, the NFL New York Jets. I don't think he's much of a pick for you in fantasy. I don't think he's not going to be on the field to contribute enough to warrant even a 15th or 17th round pick if you go that far. Great player. Maybe he'll develop over time. I'm not touching him this year in fantasy. No, there's too many other good options. So let's talk a little bit more about some of the top receivers. One of the big questions fantasy-wise that's going to be going around this year is Odell Beckham worth a first-round draft pick? Can he repeat what he did last year? And I know for a lot of you out there, if you had him, he probably won you a lot of games. Probably he could have won you a championship, fantasy championship. Or he may have cost you one because you were playing against him. But can he keep that up? That's the big question. Is he worth a first-round pick? So here's a question you have to ask yourself. Is Odell Beckham right now what you think Calvin Johnson was 3 years ago? Because if you think that he is that, then he's a first-round pick, PPR or not. He's up there. I think he can repeat it. I like the continuity. You have Eli Manning back. He's a quarterback that's been capable of putting up numbers in the past. Your offensive line, while it's not exactly the strongest unit, they started to gel towards the end of the season. The Giants' defense isn't that great, so they're going to be giving up some points. And Victor Cruz, you don't know at what level he's going to be back, but if he does come back, he'll be a clear number two. He'll be able to take off some of the pressure from Odell Beckham. I don't know if you could predict him having a historic year, but I think his floor is pretty good, and his ceiling is really high, obviously. So I would take him with a first-round pick. And, I probably shouldn't even be talking about this kind of stuff because I know people that play fantasy against me are probably going to use it against me. But I am sharing with you the little bit of wisdom I have when it comes to fantasy football. I've played it for a long time. I'm not too bad at all. Won a few championships. Lost some heartbreakers. That's kind of one of the big questions. But the wide receiver crop is so – it's deep. Really, look at these guys. Antonio Brown was a top receiver last year. A lot of you guys got him in the third, fourth round. Demaryius Thomas is out there. Julio Jones, Dez Bryant, Calvin's still there. Jordy's there. A.J. Green. Those are kind of like my top eight guys, right? You could debate the order, but those are the top eight. But there's eight number one wide receivers right there. Typically, you're playing with 10, 12. So you go to that next level, who are you really looking at? Well, you've got the likes of Randall Cobb, Alshon Jeffries, T.Y. Hilton. Good receivers. Maybe Jeffries takes the step up this year because he isn't sharing the targets anymore with Brandon Marshall. He's going to have a younger guy competing with him. So Alshon Jeffries is definitely going to become more of your number one wide receiver. So I'd put him in the top 10. And then you could debate the Mike Evans, T.Y. Hilton, Randall Cobb, DeAndre Hopkins, those guys. If I'm rounding out my top 10, I probably would throw, given the situation right now, I actually think T.Y. Hilton would probably be my 10th guy out of all those. You can make a case for Randall Cobb. You can make a case. I think T.Y. Hilton takes another step forward this year, and he's come out with some absolutely crazy, like 50, 40-point games, you know, in his career, 200-plus yards and 3 touchdowns and, you know, 10 catches in those games. He's really been great. But let's call out some guys that I think out of this top bunch, who's going to give you good value? You know, who's going to be worth your pick more so than some of the other guys? I like Jordy Nelson this year. That's a real tough one to call, huh? Jordy Nelson really, really stands out to me. He's got Aaron Rodgers throwing the ball. Yes, there's competition for targets with Randall Cobb, but Jordy Nelson, barring injury, tends to come through. But, you know, going past the top 10, one of the guys I really like, we talked about it earlier a little bit with Nelson Aguilar, but Jordan Matthews. Jordan Matthews really stepped up. He had a nice rapport with Mark Sanchez last year. He's going to have the opportunity to be a one. He's probably not going to be drafted in the top 15, but he could give you number one production potentially. I like his situation specifically. Let's see. Who else could potentially give you some good bang for your buck? Julian Edelman again. I think now, granted, you're going to have to live without Brady for the first 4 games for Julian Edelman, but he's going to be available pretty late. Everyone, when they're drafting, forgets about the little white guy that catches passes in New England, whether that be Welker in the past or Julian Edelman now. I think Edelman will give you some good value. You get him a little bit later. Some people are going to sleep on Sammy Watkins, and I know they're not going to be throwing a ton, but Sammy Watkins is a guy that could give you some value. He's going to slip a little bit, but he's got all the talent in the world. So now you want to go a little bit deeper. We could go a little bit deeper at the wide receiver position. Some of the guys I like really that are going to give you a ton of value are some of those rookies we talked about earlier. You know, not Devontae Parker. I don't like his situation. But the Brashad Perrymans of the world could give you something. Amari Cooper I really like. One guy coming off a great year last year that I would caution you on is Mike Evans. And here's why. Mike Evans, as a percentage of his total points last year, were touchdowns. That percentage was very high, and that's very hard to duplicate. He's also getting a rookie quarterback. And while Winston may be very good in the future, and he may even be good this year, I wouldn't think the Bucs, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, are going to let him go out there and air it out 50 times a game. And that's what it took with that offensive line for Josh McCown to make Mike Evans viable. It was volume. He's a very good kid, very good player. And I'm not by any means saying he's not worth an investment in fantasy, but I would temper your expectations for Mike Evans. One guy that I like a lot that's more in the top 10, Alshon Jeffrey. We talked about his situation. Once Brandon Marshall left the field last year, and I know it was the Trestman offense, he showed out as the number one. And he's going to be the true number one. And now John Fox goes in there. It's going to be more of a traditional offense, but I still think Alshon Jeffrey is going to have to be involved to get the Bears to where they want to be, and Jay Cutler is familiar with him, and he doesn't have his blankie anymore in Brandon Marshall. So, another player I like his situation, DeAndre Hopkins. He's you know, Andre Johnson's gone now. They got Ryan Mallett there, second year. You also have Brian Hoyer, which doesn't inspire a ton of confidence, but DeAndre Hopkins could step up and become more of a number one or high number two guy for you. And I think the problem with DeAndre Hopkins last year wasn't that he didn't show up. It's that he was also inconsistent. So that's another guy to keep an eye on. One more player I want to bring up to everyone's attention is Golden Tate. Golden Tate, if you're playing PPR, I think will do better than he did last year for you. He did very well as a number two, but I think the Lions, they backed up Stafford's attempts from like 660 on average per year to, I want to say 450, right around there. I mean, they took back a ton of throws, and they leaned on the running game a lot. I think you'll see that go the other way. He'll get a few more passes, Calvin Johnson's going to be there to take away the heat, but Golden Tate showed up pretty well last year, especially if you're in a PPR league. So definitely check him out if you get a chance to draft him a little bit later on. Andre Johnson, a lot of people are going to pay number one money, but not money. Well, maybe money if you're playing auctions. A lot of people are going to pay a number one or number two price for Andre Johnson when he's stepping into a number two role in Indianapolis, which is already hard enough to predict who's going to get the ball. From an offensive standpoint, Indianapolis is a great offense to be associated with, but good luck figuring out who's catching the balls from Sunday to Sunday. There's so much talent. They invested in Philip Dorsett. They have Dante Moncrief there. You have T.Y. Hilton, of course. You have the two tight ends in Fleener and Allen. You bring in Frank Gore. And Andre Johnson at 34 years old, I think at best is going to be a number two in that. And it's going to be hard to really pick out who's going to be the number two in that offense from week to week across the positions. I wouldn't necessarily chase Andre Johnson unless he came down to me at a level I was comfortable picking him at. I wouldn't go chasing him at all. So some other players out there, the wide receiver position. Let's talk a little bit of New York Jets football. Let's incorporate some of the Jets. What are the true fantasy options for the New York Jets football team? Well, if you trust in Geno Smith, I don't. Maybe you're a little crazy. But really, it's hard for me to really invest a ton in. And I love the New York Jets, but fantasy-wise, it's going to be very difficult to predict. Let's talk a little bit about the wide receivers. Eric Decker showed out a little bit last year, being really kind of the only option at the number one. He almost had 1,000 yards, not quite 1,000. He showed up that last game of the season. He was a little banged up, though, too. The Jets didn't pass the ball enough last year. I think they'll pass the ball more this year, but I think the offense is going to be more spread around. It's going to be hard to predict. Even your number one in Brandon Marshall, I think is probably going to be overdrafted this year. I wouldn't invest the resources that you did in years past thinking you're getting the Brandon Marshall from Chicago or the Brandon Marshall from Denver or, heck, the Brandon Marshall from Miami. I think you're going to get a Brandon Marshall that's going to put up some numbers. He's going to play well, but it's hard for me to really have the faith in Geno Smith until he shows out and trust Marshall as like my number one or number two starting wide receiver in fantasy football. Looking at the backfield, it's just muddied. And you could say that about a lot of different situations, but you got Chris Ivory back there. You know, I mean, and he's a good player. I really like Ivory. But you bring in Steven Ridley. And then you have Bilal Powell. It's very difficult to predict. And then you trade for Zach Stacy, who, if you follow fantasy, was kind of a one-hit wonder his first year. He's a little overvalued in fantasy circles for what he did his first year, in my opinion, based on the fact that it was nothing but pure volume. His yards per carry was nothing special. I think it was just barely 4.0. But he just got the ball like 30 times a game and ran like crazy. That's not the situation he's stepping into now. He fell off pretty bad last year in Jeff Fisher's eyes. I think he became like the third or fourth start running back on the depth chart for the St. Louis Rams last year. I don't expect much more from him this year. But those carries are going to be so split, it's going to be very difficult to figure out either the wide receivers or the running backs. I wouldn't invest a ton in. Now, a couple positions I think might be worthwhile. If you're needing a tight end, a cheap tight end, not your starting tight end, but if you want a tight end that could potentially pay off dividends that you're going to draft really late, Jason Morrow, you could do a lot worse than him. He's going to be featured in the pass game. The Jets brought in a blocking tight end. And Amaro's going to be able to be featured in the pass game more. I like him as kind of a sleeper guy. He's not in the top 10, but he could surprise you. And if you're in the mood for taking a flyer on a tight end towards the end of the draft, he might be someone that could help you out. He's going to be on the field the majority of the time. And the ball's, you know, so Carlos, what are you saying? Don't invest in wide receivers or running backs because of the offense and Geno Smith, but invest in Jason Morrow because why should we do that? Well, he's going to be out there a majority of the times in pass-catching situations. The Jets are going to have to throw the ball some, and he's already shown out a little bit last year that he can do it, and now he's got a whole year underneath him, and the tight end position is a wasteland. We'll talk about it in another show, But the tight end position outside of Rob Gronkowski, and, yeah, I know Jimmy Graham was up there last year too. I don't like his situation as much as what he had in New Orleans. So it's Rob Gronkowski and everyone else. And Jimmy Graham's still towards the top there. But, you know, there's Julius Thomas changed teams. Tight end is a wasteland. You're basically throwing darts at this position in fantasy. So if you're not going to get the top guy, which I wouldn't suggest spending the first-round pick on a tight end, you're going to end up with some guy that's going to be inconsistent, for the most part, week to week, even Jimmy Graham. So why not Jason Morrow? He's going to be a starting tight end. He's a young guy with great hands, pass-catching tight end coming out of college. He has a year under his belt. You could do worse than Jason Morrow. And then the other position group that I like and may also fly under the radar is the Jets' defense. So, yeah, their defense, they have a great defensive line, upgraded the secondary. Look at their schedule. They're not playing anyone nearly as tough as they did last year in terms of getting points scored on them. I think with the signings they've done, they could improve that turnover margin, get more pressure on the quarterback, so they're going to get you sacks, get you fumbles, get you picks with Revis and Cromartie and Screen, you know, and D. Milliner is your number four cornerback. Your safety position has been improved this year with Marcus Gilchrist. Now, he's not the greatest guy, but you have a better defense playing against worse offenses. And there's going to be a lot of other fantasy defenses that go much higher than the Jets. You're going to see the Seahawks fly off the board early. You're going to see the Rams fly off the board early. If you want to wait on a defense, this is not a bad one to wait on. If you don't want to invest a ton early, the Jets defense, I think, they could be a top five fantasy defense this year, and you could get them at like a top 10 or top 15 price, just because of the stigma that the New York Jets carry in fantasy circles. Most people don't like touching them with a 10-foot pole. Normally, I would advise that too. In years past, that's been true. The Jets defense, I think, could be up there this year. They might be a nice value pick for you down the road. Anyway, folks, we are nearing the end of our show. It's been fun talking with all of you. And, you know, if you have any other comments or anything like that you want to get a hold of the show, you can follow us on Twitter at CNC Jets Factor. Find our Facebook page. It's CNC Football Factory. And, of course, you can follow me personally at CSS Sardinus on Twitter. And at JetsFan0532 is my co-host CJ DeSimone. It's been real, guys. It's been a pleasure talking New York Jets football with all of you. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode, even though I've been talking to myself for a good chunk of it. Anyways, we will see you guys. Not sure if it's going to be next week or the week after. Got some personal stuff going on, going to be kind of moving. I don't know if I'll be available, but we will definitely let you guys know when the next show is. And as always, stay tuned, everyone, for the upcoming New York Jets fans.com. You know, check out that website. It's going to be launching real soon. A ton of great podcasts. We're part of that lineup. A bunch of great writers and contributors. It's going to be pretty awesome. It's coming up here sometime in June. I don't know much more than that. I know about as much as all of you do. Anyway, everyone, have a wonderful Sunday. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Don't dread work too much tomorrow. And, of course, let's go Jets.